This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on June 8th, 2017. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to convene the open session for Thursday, June 6, 2017. And our first item on the agenda are combined matters AO-2017-01 and AO-2017-03. So I think we have an understanding that council will come to the table and we'll consider the two jointly. And if you want to flip on who goes first, that works. And if it's not, then I'll pick the one with the lowest number.
Happy to go first if you would like.
So that's, do you have a preference?
I think I'll go first.
For the record,
we were the first ones to get our request in.
Okay. For the record, we have Kate Belinsky here on behalf of AUA. And we have David Mason, who is former commissioner and chairman, of course, on behalf of EuroPAC.
And Kate's a former EA.
She certainly should, probably more so than the commissioner. So it's great to see you both there, and we'll hold forth. I did have a conversation with the Commissioner Hunter about the possibility of maybe hearing argument today and giving us some thought, time for some thought. It would take, I think, Commissioner Hunter the Vice Chair, apologize, showed that your deadline, Kate, would be for June 15th. Dave is June 26th. Our next meeting is June 22nd, so it would take a couple extra days on your end to allow us to come back on the 22nd.
Yeah.
Would that be something you're comfortable with at this time?
My client would be
comfortable. Thanks very much. I'm not sure we'll do that, but at least we wanted to consider that. So, Ms. Belinsky.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here before you this morning. As one of the commissioners, Commissioner Goodman, mentioned, we are here. This is divorce court today. AUA, the American Urological Association, has been affiliated via an advisory opinion that was issued in 2002 with AACU. Over the course of the years, and as laid out in our advisory opinion request, the two organizations have moved apart from each other, both, I would say, ideologically and also with their vision and mission. And also from governance perspective, they no longer have the overlapping interest and governance structure that they once had. They don't participate in their conferences. They're not doing joint conferences anymore. AUA is hosting a conference and is allowing a number of other urological associations to participate in that conference, but AACU is only one among many and may or may not even participate in that conference. There is some overlapping membership, as there was in 2002, but the AACU is a much smaller organization, and so while I think their numbers were 98% of their members are also members of AUA, only 18% of AUA members, if you just do the math, AUA doesn't track dual membership, but just from a pure numbers perspective, only 18% of their membership could be, would be a member of AACU because they have over 22,000 members. And so for those 88%, or 82% rather, of members that are not also members of AACU, they don't have a voice in the political process. They aren't able to have their ideas and their candidates that they want to support. And it's just, at this point, untenable for my client, and they wish to be disaffiliated. Looking back at the AO in 2002, I would argue that it was tenuous at best that they were affiliated to begin with. I think there's a lot of organizations that have similar, some overlaps in people. Someone may serve as a president of an organization and then 10 years later, which is the case here, serve as a president of another organization. That doesn't make them affiliated. And I think you would have a lot of trade associations and membership associations would be affiliated that are, it would be a total shock to them to find out that they were affiliated if you use this same standard, you know, and looked at these facts objectively today, looking at where AUA and AACU are. I think to continue this and to say that they continue to be affiliated is basically perpetuating an opinion that, you know, a precedent that should not have been set in the first place, because they should not have been deemed to be affiliated in 2002. I think, you know, instead of doubling down on that bad precedent, if you looked at the objective facts of both of these organizations today, you would find that they would not be affiliated. And that's the proper precedent to set. When you look at other industry associations, you know, the AMA would be potentially affiliated with any of its smaller, the American Medical Association, for example, with any of the smaller organizations, because most doctors are members of the AMA, or many doctors are members of the AMA, and also probably of their own medical specialty organizations, such as AUA. So I think, you know, for those reasons, it doesn't make any sense to for these sort of tenuous ties, you know, where only 18% of the membership is overlapping. The governance, the bylaws no longer require that members sit on each other's boards or on organizations. There is common officers, but again, there's a large time period in between, and it's all circumstantial. It just happens to be that the same people who are interested in being active in organizations, they're joiners, they're people that want to lead organizations and you know, be on boards, tend to be on the same boards and tend to move from one board to another. That doesn't mean that they're affiliated. The common employees, they no longer share a lobbyist, and although some of the state organizations from AUA use the same vendor as AACU, that vendor also has, you know, many, many, many other organizations that they represent and that they work for, and it's not, that should not create affiliation. It's basically, it's a management company. And as far as the formation, that, you know, we can argue about whether it was formed by members. Again, they just happened to be members of AUA who also happened to be the individuals who wanted to have a more political arm and wanted to, or have a more political organization, and, you know, decided on their own to form AACU. There was no vote that was taken by AUA. There was no, you know, formal resolution or discussion or anything. It was just a group of people who happened to be members of AUA who were politically minded, you know, formed that organization. So I think for all these reasons, if you look, I understand that the commission's in a difficult position because you have this 2002 AO and you are trying to look at, you know, what has changed since then. But if the AO is incorrect in the first time around and they shouldn't have been affiliated to begin with, I just don't think that you should be in a position to perpetuate that, you know, that decision. So I think for all those reasons, we would request that our advisory opinion request be granted.
Thank you very much. Any questions at this point?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Commissioner Goodman.
I was sort of fighting through the various submissions just to try to catalog the points of connection between the two groups. And, excuse me, can you tell me, so what am I missing here? If I list among the principal relationship points, historical affiliation, overlap, some overlapping membership, three members of the AACU sit on a 35-member health policy committee of the AUA. They co-sponsor events. I understand they used to jointly sponsor events according to an affiliation agreement. Now they will co-sponsor events the way many groups and coalitions might co-sponsor an event, but they do co-sponsor events. I understand you say they have hired different lobbyists, but they align on legislative efforts. They hold some of these conferences and forums to align themselves on policy affecting urology. And I understand your argument is it's coincidental, but they do have at least one president who's going to sit on two boards, or what's that connection point? Mr. Mason, maybe you.
Yeah.
I think you. This is your point, really.
Yes. The president-elect of the AACU holds an office in the AUA such that he will rotate onto the AUA board in 2 years, is my understanding. Okay.
He will concurrently hold. He will be president of
He will be past president of AACU and consequently a board member by right, and will also be a board member of AUA.
And so he'll be a board member of both organizations at the same time?
At the same time.
How many board members of each organization are there?
There are 14 board members of AACU. The AUA board member is larger. I'm not sure.
13 or 14.
Okay. So one board member of 14 of both organizations will serve concurrently on both boards.
But one did until either right now or until last month.
Okay.
And then one will again.
And I understand your argument is that's coincidental. One person happens to serve, but I'm just looking at the connection points. And then you have one associational management firm in common at the sectional level. Okay. Chairman Mason, are there other connection points I've missed in that catalog?
The pattern of rotating officers, I would argue, is a connection point. And obviously we differ in how we characterize that and how we do view the weight of it.
Yes.
We laid out in our request a pretty extensive pattern, and I would emphasize that was sort of partial and illustrative. And particularly when you get down to the section level, it's very common to find people who are in different offices in the different organizations at the same time, or who move back and forth from one to the other.
Okay. Anything else that I've missed in my catalog of connection points?
Should we then?
Well, I have this other question.
Oh, sure, go ahead. I'm sorry.
With your indulgence.
Of course.
Let me. Yes. Oh, you want to go? Let Mr. I'm sorry.
I was just wondering if we shouldn't
let Mr. Mason,
and then we'll have a little back and forth. We'll just see. I don't know. It's up to whatever you want to do.
I understand. Why don't I indulge Chairman Mason and give him the same opportunity?
Okay, you prepared at this point. We'll get started. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. To start off, AACU supports Draft A. We appreciate it and thought it was a good piece of work that reflected both the Commission's regulation and the prior AOs. I hadn't really thought about discussing the 2002-2003 AO, but I was at the Commission at the time and voted for it and think it was correctly decided. And I do agree that if it was correctly decided, then that has significant weight for the current request, because while some things have changed, many things have not changed. The 2002 AO was correctly decided, then I think there's a strong argument that the organizations are still affiliated. That's what I believe, and that's what we'd ask you to find. There are a whole lot of things that we put in the submission that I won't repeat, so I'll emphasize the two that I think are most significant. And the one is the one that I just addressed, and that is the officer pattern. And I just have to say that both this and the creation of the AACU is more than happenstance. This is a small, discrete professional medical group whose members share common interests, and it's not as if it's some kind of a coincidence that the same people are serving in offices in both organizations. And when you have a pattern such that, for instance, 13 of 14 current AACU board members have been or are officers or committee members in various entities of the AUA, that's a pretty overwhelming pattern in terms of the AUA membership involvement. Same for each of the last 11 AACU presidents have been officers in AUA at the national or section level. And that pattern, as I say, sort of extends down to the section level, and I think is very robust. And the Commission's regulation, of course, looks at patterns like these that indicate a formal relationship or an ongoing relationship. And while these relationships aren't formal in the sense of bylaw provisions, that require this or anything like that. They certainly are represent an ongoing relationship and a very strong one. The second factor I think is important is the membership overlap. And naturally, of course, the larger organization is going to have a smaller overlap. But I've had many occasions and since I left the commission in looking at affiliation AOs and trying to help associations figure out whether they're affiliated with another association or not. And I believe I'm correct in saying that in every case where there's been more than 50% membership overlap, that where there's been an opinion, the commission has found affiliation. In every case where the overlap was less than 50%, the commission has not. And that includes some cases where the commission was looking at national groups and state groups. And so you would have a pattern such as this one where the state group members would 90% or, you know, some high number be members of the national group, but obviously running the other way would be much smaller. If you decide that that factor is not relevant here or not sufficiently weighty to carry the weight, I think you'll have done something that hasn't been done before. And I actually think it will make it more difficult for organizations to figure out whether or not they're affiliated. The commission's regulation is difficult enough with a 10-part multi-factor balancing test. I start talking to people about it, and they, you know, it's immediately very difficult to understand. And so when you've got a couple of strong factors that have been historically weighted strongly by the commission, that's actually very helpful in being able to counsel organizations. I think that's very important here, and I think it ought to weigh strongly in favor of a finding of affiliation. Thank you, and I'm happy to entertain more questions.
I'm sorry, came back to Commissioner Goodman.
Yeah, I apologize for jumping the gun. Let me go through my catalog of the factors that would indicate separateness and make sure that I at least have that comprehensive list. So as I work through the submissions, I see that there are no formal governance powers one group over the other. Do we stipulate
yes.
to that? Okay.
Yes.
And that we do have separate boards. I understand that we have a overlapping member, but we do have separate boards.
Yeah, and not currently an overlapping member.
Not currently.
Correct.
Okay. We have separate officers, at least at the national group. I understand we have a firm that is the executive director. It's a third-party vendor, and some sections use a common vendor to be their executive director. At the national level, there are no overlapping officers.
Correct.
Okay. There's no cross-funding between the two organizations as of this date?
Correct.
It's my understanding they're small. I wouldn't suggest that it's a weighty factor, but at least as my understanding is, as of the last AAU meeting or the current AAU meeting, there's some movement back and forth in terms of funds and fees.
Is that cost offsets for jointly sponsored events, or is that some operational subsidy that's going back and forth? What is that?
So it was part of the agreement that just ended in March. So it's no longer going forward. There's no funding.
No ongoing subsidy of each organization, other than maybe some residual payments resulting from the agreement after March. Am I right about that?
If that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would agree. There's no subsidy from one organization to the other.
You canceled an affiliation agreement or are in the process of canceling the affiliation agreement that, to me, was quite persuasive in 2002.
Correct.
Is that canceled at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
It was not renewed, but same effect.
Okay. And kind of follow on to an earlier point about the bylaws and governance. There's no formal governance control of one organization over the activities of the other? In other words, the bylaws don't give one organization any governance power over the other. And I take it, is that at the national level as well as the sectional levels?
In terms of governance powers, yes. I believe there's still a committee membership that's permitted from on an AUA committee for AACU representation.
I mentioned that on my earlier count. Three members of the AACU sit on the health policy committee. by formal bylaw and it's a 35-member committee of the AUA, right? Okay. But as far as the boards of directors and the directing the funding and operations of the two organizations, does either have any governance power to direct the other?
No.
Okay. At the sectional level, is there any such power between the sections of one organization or the other to direct the affairs of the other?
No.
No.
Okay. They are two C6 organizations. It sounds like, and I understand your point, Chairman Mason, about what significance we should make of this proceeding here today and its posture, but we have apparently two competing C6 organizations that are actually competing against each other, it looks like, for either membership and or legal independence. Am I right in that characterization?
I wouldn't characterize it as competing, and I hope and suspect that whatever the outcome of this, you know, particular decision by the commission and the fallout from it, that the organizations actually will be cooperating in the future because it's going to be in the interest of both organizations to cooperate. They represent the same professional groups, and they're going to have the same objectives. So they are certainly separate organizations, but I think to describe them as competing is a non-legal judgment that may not have a place here.
Okay. Point taken, but certainly in looking at the overall objective of the regulation, it's an anti-circumvention regulation to prevent what is effectively one organization from operating two political action committees in doubling its campaign contribution limits. The factors get at whether this is effectively one organization exercising two contribution limits. So why isn't the fact that you all are here in fundamental disagreement about your legal independence of each other and rights, why isn't that some evidence that you're two different organizations? And that you're not one organization circumventing the contribution limits?
If that's for me, and I assume it is.
You made the point that we should take no notice of of the fact that we've all been called here today.
I think I made the point in one of the earlier submissions that this commission frequently finds itself at loggerheads, and we've even, apart from this commission, we've served on boards and organizations where the boards themselves or different components of the organizations have been have severe disagreements at various times. And so I don't think that has a particular bearing. What we're talking about is a legal conclusion that flows from the other relations and the fact that in essence, you're taking the legal conclusion, which we differ about, and making that a factor in your legal analysis. And I don't think you can do that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, may I continue?
Of course.
Okay. Ms. Malinsky, have I fairly characterized the catalog of the major points of what you assert to be the independence of the two organizations?
Yes, I think you've summarized that. And I also, just to the previous point, if I may, while the two organizations may in some general sense be ideologically aligned, the AUA and AACU have moved apart on the sort of the more the nitty-gritty issues. And so their strategy is different. The types of candidates that they want to be supporting, the types of messaging that they want to be engaging in are divergent. And AUA doesn't want to be basically handcuffed to AACU in terms of their political activities. They want to be able to exert the independence that they have and should be able to exert in the political world. And being tethered to AACU is not allowing them to do that. And so that's...
Chairman Mason, do you have a reaction to that? Because that does go to the purpose that we have this regulation. You know, a political organization is effectively one organization pursuing one political objective with utilizing two different contribution limits. She says that AUA represents, that they really are not all completely aligned with you and may diverge in important ways, which is evidence that you're not one organization. So how do you react to that?
I have difficulty reacting to it because it's not something that I've tried to delve into with the AACU, nor to this point has it been part of the submissions. The groups obviously have had some organizational differences, but I'm not prepared to concede or address how deeply those go or whether they represent any substantial difference in political strategy or political preferences.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, may I continue?
Thank you.
I'll be happy to yield and come back to other questions I have.
No, go right ahead. I'm in a hurry.
I think
Commissioner Weintraub, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Let me ask a blank spot in my understanding of the two organizations. Are any relationships at the sectional level that might, I mean, it's easy to analyze the two Washington, or I don't know if they're Washington, D.C. based, but the national organizations and their relationships and membership at the sectional level, have I missed any governance or operational ties at the sectional level such that the two organizations may be tied as a result of what's happening at their sections? And I understand you all call them sections. I would generally refer them chapters with most nonprofit organizations, but I take it we call them sections in both of these organizations, and they're geographical sections. Are there, I didn't fully understand all, for example, we didn't have all the bylaws of all the sections to see if there might be some formal governance overlap at that level that might somehow feed up to the national level. Am I missing anything there that I should be focused on?
I believe the relations at the sectional level are relevant and indicative of affiliation. And the AACU doesn't have separate sectional organizations the way the AUA does. In the case of the AUA, there are separately incorporated entities that are the sections. And there are bylaw provisions both at the AUA level and at the AUA section level that relate back and forth. And a majority of the AUA board is composed of section representatives. In the case of the AACU, the sections are not separately incorporated, and they don't have substantial separate activities at the section level. In some cases, at the section level, there's a high degree of cooperation, such that, for instance, you'll look at an AUA section newsletter and find the AACU report in the newsletter that's presented as a part of the meeting. So, most of those are not bylaw provisions. Those are simply informal arrangements. By the AACU bylaws, a majority of the AACU board is elected by AACU members from within the AUA's sections. So there is that explicit sort of, you know, governance tie back to how the board is selected.
Mm-hmm. AUA does not have any corresponding provisions that require their section board members to be AACU members or anything like that. There's no tie there.
Let me, I might have others, but Chairman Mason, I do have one question. This organization wants to divorce itself from the organization you represent. What would it take? Under your analysis, can they ever operate their own political action committee, or are you forever going to cling to them and into their restricted class? Tell me what it would take. I've cataloged sort of the connection points. What can they do to shed themselves? Or are you saying, given the overlapping membership and the history of these two organizations, they can never divorce from us?
I would not say never. But
what would it take in your estimation?
I think the gap that you're looking at is that while there's a substantial difference at the national level, At the section level, there is not. And for instance, that's evidenced by the fact that the sections were willing to contribute to the administrative expenses of EuroPAC after the national organization said no, that they wouldn't. In fact, most of them did. And so it's that kind of cooperation that I think makes a substantial difference here. Is unlikely to change given the nature of the organizations as I understand them.
Ms. Walensky, what's your reaction to my question, Chairman Mason's answer?
Yeah, well, I think that's what we're struggling with, is that the organizations can't get away from their past, and they're always going to have some level of overlapping membership because they have different perspectives, and people join these organizations for different reasons. The AUA is much more sort of a general policy focused and not you know, as political, and is more of an educational society, whereas the AACU has a different and more different focus. And so people will always join both organizations because they're joining them for different reasons. That's just part of the history of the organizations, and there's no way that they're going to change enough that that people are not going to want to be members of both organizations. At least some people will want to be, but for the other 82% of the members of AUA that are not members of AACU, they're at a loss, and I don't know what they can do to get far enough away that Commissioner Mason would say, okay, you know, now we're no longer affiliated.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you both. I'm struck, Dave, by the fact that you are, you know, working with an organization that's, you know, trying to, you know, get along despite disagreements. That was always my experience working with you, so it seems fitting. Kate, you said that the original AO was wrong, and so, you know, we shouldn't compound the error by just sticking with the wrong answer. But as I understand it, both of your organizations came in and asked for that answer in 2002.
They did, and I'm not saying, and I don't want to say that the first AO was wrong. I think there were a lot of other ties. I'm just saying that to look at that AO and then try to say, you know, that AO is the basis from which we have to say, well, have we gotten far enough away with the facts, as opposed to looking objectively at the situation between the two organizations today? And if these organizations had not had that prior AO and came in, and with these facts, would you say that they were affiliated? I argue that they're not. And even reading the advisory opinion, reading through, you know, I think you could get to the end, and it was a surprise conclusion because, you know, it was these facts weigh in favor of disaffiliation. These facts are neutral. Here's a few facts that weigh in favor, and even some of those were a stretch. You know, certainly not. It certainly wasn't a clear-cut case. And then you get to the end, and it's okay. So on balance, these factors weigh in favor of affiliation. But I don't know it's not as clear-cut as in many of these affiliation AOs that have been considered in the past. And I think we are just in a very different position because we don't agree with each other. The two organizations don't agree with each other on fundamental issues. To have them have to be tethered because of this 2002 AO, whether rightly or wrongly decided, and there were much stronger facts. There was a formal affiliation agreement in 2002, which, you know, certainly I think was important and, maybe one of the weightiest factors. We don't have that now. Just looking at the facts objectively, I think we're in a much different position.
Well, I think I'm guessing that everyone would agree that this is a close call. You know, I think obviously an argument could be made one way and an argument could be made the other way, and you both have done it. And it's These affiliation AOs are usually not that as
usually this exciting.
Not this exciting and not this difficult. And normally, you know, I'm inclined to give some weight to whether two organizations want to be affiliated or don't in deciding how the factors weigh, but that's not helpful here since there seems to be some disagreement. Do you feel that your membership is that their views are being misrepresented, or that they are being associated with views that they don't hold? I'm trying to figure out what's driving the request from your client.
Yeah, well, I don't want to say that they're being misrepresented, but they don't have the ability to represent themselves in the way that they wish to represent themselves. I mean, there's no current decision to start their own PAC that would then have to be affiliated with AACU's PAC, but that may in the future be something that they do, and then they would be tied to these joint contribution limits where they would not be able to make the contributions that they want to make because perhaps AACU has already made contributions in their name. And you know, for organizations that have political action committees, it's an important branding message, and AUA is not able to go out there with their message to Congress and to you know, members that they support, and to get their message out. Basically, they're stuck with AACU's message, and they don't have their own ability to represent their membership. Basically, which is what they're seeking to do.
Well, they can certainly go and talk to Congress any way they want. I mean, there are other ways of getting your message to Congress other than giving them money.
Well, lobbying is one way, obviously, but a political action committee is an important tool in the toolbox for any association, a membership association that wants to be active in the political system.
Sure, but you say that there's been no decision. You're not currently in a position where the client wants to start their PAC and they can't.
Well, I wouldn't say can't. I mean, they certainly could start a PAC. They would just have to be affiliated.
Right.
And clearly, there's not a lot of cooperation right now. So I think it would be difficult for the two PACs to operate affiliated with one another, given the current situation.
But there aren't two PACs now, and you said there are no immediate plans to start one.
We have not, prepared paper. We're sort of waiting to see what happens here to decide what the organizations are going to do. I think it's a little premature at this point because I don't know that they would start a PAC if they had to be affiliated with AACU.
Okay. That's all I've got.
Commissioner, any further questions? I was going to bounce it back to you. I had a couple of questions.
No.
I'm mostly curious to know if we did nothing and allowed affiliation to continue, I assume there would be some further drift in some ways. And if from the momentum that's or lack of their momentum, and I'm inclined to know what that might be, where would things be left in terms of future planned issues or that kind of thing?
I mean, I think the organizations would be left where AUA doesn't have a political voice and AACU does. I mean, I think that's mm-hmm. basically, where they would be at. I don't think that there's a lot of desire for, I mean, certainly AUA is not going to go back to supporting financially or in other ways AACU's political action committee. That's not, things are not going to go back to like pre-advisory opinion request days where, we rewind the tape. I think that's, AUA had already made the decision last year to stop providing administrative support to EuroPAC, and there's no desire on AUA's part to go back to that.
Commissioner Mason, Mr. Mason.
I've had some discussions with the AACU board as a part of this, and I think it's fair to characterize the AACU board as hopeful of improving relations with the AUA. And wanting that to happen and hoping that that happens in the future.
If that were to happen, what would be some of the factors that would cause that? And at that particular point, I'm just wondering if there would be a second thought on the part of your client to say, well, maybe with those changes, it's not so bad after all. I'm not trying to...
I can't address in detail.
Argue for
what,
a marriage here. I'm just kind of curious to know.
It's going to take more than flowers.
I can't address in detail what it might be. These are two organizations that historically had strong ties, and then had some evolution, and in the about 2002 period, found a mode of cooperation, and I think it's fair to say that is not as robust as it was then. But again, from the AACU side, they are hopeful of having that restored, and as leadership changes and organizational priorities change, just as they drifted apart to a degree, they may be able to come back together.
Mr. Weintraub?
So the biggest advantage to staying together is that you get to solicit all the members, the larger group of members of the larger organization. But if it is true that the larger membership of the larger organization isn't interested in supporting the smaller organization, then they're not going to make those contributions. They're not going to be contributing to the PAC. So what's the advantage to your organization of maintaining an affiliation with a whole bunch of people that don't want to be affiliated with you and aren't going to give you any money?
Well, I don't think that's the case, which is to say that the AUA, the national organization is certainly not going to cooperate in solicitations, but urologists know other urologists, and they're able to make solicitations of other urologists who they know to be currently members of the AUA. And that, in fact, is occurring or has been occurring up to now.
Mr. Goodman.
How many members, how many urologists are members of the AACU?
I'm going to have to look at my draft, but I believe it's just short of 3,000.
How many members of the AUA? How many urologists are members?
22,000, over 22,000.
22,000?
Yes.
So the practical, stepping aside from the technical legal grounds and whether or not the factors add up to being essentially a unitary organization, is that an organization with a restricted class of 3,000 is trying mightily to remain affiliated with an organization so that it can solicit 22. Assume 3,000 overlap, an additional 19,000 members. And the organization that has those additional 19,000 members doesn't want to be affiliated with that little organization or open up its members to solicitation by that other organization.
That's correct.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Commissioner, I would say that that is correct as to the national organizations, but it is not correct as to the sections. And that at the section level, we have had sections who have contributed to the, since the AUA stopped providing administrative support for EuroPAC. The sections have continued to do that, and some of the sections have facilitated EuroPAC in soliciting AUA members at section events.
Okay, I'm a little lost in which sections and whose sections we're talking about, so let me, because I think this is important. Are you saying that the sections, the AUA sections, have continued to contribute to the administrative cost of the PAC?
I am.
Okay, so using associational money, they have continued to contribute to the administrative overhead?
Yes, I believe that to be the case.
I want to get a reaction.
No, but this is what my client has informed me of, yes.
Ms. Belinsky, did you have a reaction to that representation?
Yeah, so the sections are using their own funds. They're not AUA funds. They're not AUA association funds.
But they are your sections, right?
They're the sections, yeah. But the sections have their own, again, they have their own bylaws. They have their own boards. They're independent of AUA.
So you're saying their continuing relationship, including subsidy of this PAC, should not be attributed to the AUA national organization?
I would argue that.
Do you agree that you're affiliated with the sections of the AUA, that the national organization is affiliated with those organizations?
They are affiliated, yes.
So by proxy, AUA would not be affiliated with the AACU?
They don't control the sections, so I would say no.
Okay. When we talked, I want to think about that a little bit more, but because, as I said, this is a blank spot. The relationship between these sections is something I didn't fully grasp from the submissions, and what implications those relationships might have for the national organizations. When we talk about 22,000 members and 3,000 members, are we including the sectional members in those counts or not? In other words, if I'm a urologist, do I join my geographical section and I may not be a member of the AUA?
My understanding, let me just check. These are both, right? Yeah, it's reciprocal.
So if I join my section, I am automatically a member of the AUA?
Yes.
Okay. So when we're counting 22,000 members, we're counting among all the section members plus those who independently joined the AUA?
Yes.
Okay, and that's a comprehensive number. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I want to get everyone... I want to just explain that I understand we have Chairman Mason until January 26th. Am I right, counsel? June 26th to provide the AACU a response to this advisory opinion request?
Yes, the 60-day deadline is June 26th.
Okay, and we have another meeting on June 22. Am I right about that?
Two.
Okay, but Ms. Belinsky, our deadline for your advisory opinion would be June 15th?
We'd be happy to extend the deadline so that you can consider this at the next meeting.
To consider this a little bit more? Mr. Chairman, I might suggest that I can't speak for everyone. I might want a little bit more time to mull some of these nuances,
sure.
But I alert Ms. Belinsky that I may ask the request for a little bit more time.
Yeah, no, I understand. Mr. Weintraub.
Can you explain a little bit more what these sections are and how they I understand sections of the ABA, but I don't know enough about urology, I think, to understand what sections of a urological organization might be.
It's probably quite different.
Not to put my client on the spot, but I'm going to ask the general counsel, Diane Beery, to come to the table.
Welcome to the chair.
Thank you so much. They are quite different. The sections are independently organized. They are independently incorporated in various states. The way that they fit in with the national organization is that each section several ways. They elect members to serve on the AUA National Board. So we have a board of 13 or 14, depending on whether we have an elect position in the officership. But 8 of our board members are always section representatives. So each section, each of our 8 sections, elects a member to sit on our board. So they, in part, through that membership in our board, participate in the governance of the national organization. The national organization does not exert any power back to the sections. We don't sit on their boards, and so forth. The sections also alternate in electing or selecting, nominating the president of the national organization, and then the membership of the entire organization confirms that nomination. So there's a rotating pattern, and they do nominate the presidents. But it's not what I would consider a typical chapter relationship where, we're feeding the sections all of the materials that they use or all of their agenda or all of their priorities. They are independent organizations that then kind of funnel up and participate in some ways in the national organization. I hope that helps. It's a bit of a strange beast.
That's another question, Mr. Chairman.
Of course. Just keep moving.
Dave, is there some way you could quantify how much support, either by how many people are contributing or by what, how much money or what percentage, how much support your organization is getting from members of the larger organization that are not members of your organization? I'm trying to get a sense of what you stand to lose here.
Sure. In terms of administrative funds, that in the request, that six of the eight AUA sections contributed last year to administrative funding for EuroPAC, and so far in 2017, four of the eight AUA sections have made contributions. So I don't have the dollar amounts of those, and I'm. It would be difficult to shred out the dollar amounts of PAC contributions because we would be looking for a subset of people who are AUA members who are not AACU members. And while we know that certain people in that category have contributed and have been solicited because we don't have the, you know, cross access to membership list, it might be difficult to give you a dollar figure.
But you obviously feel that there would be some significant impairment.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Goodman.
Chairman Mason, you said you don't have access to the membership list of the AUA. How do you know whom to solicit? How do you define your restricted class if you don't have their membership list?
In the context of section meetings, the people at the section meetings are all AUA members.
You're talking about the section meetings of the
AUA section meetings.
So AACU representatives go to AUA section meetings and solicit people at those meetings?
They do.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, continue.
The sections are what, licensed by the AUA? I mean, how does AUA protect, for example, its name and its intellectual property and those types of things? I'm trying to understand better the relationship between the national organization and the sections. They're not chartered chapters. That's the way I understand, you know, most national organizations sort of charter chapters.
So they are chartered in the sense that they are set forth in our bylaws.
Yes, I saw that.
So that's the kind of the largest way that we determine the boundaries of the sections and who will be in each section. In terms of protecting our property, I honestly don't know. I don't think there's ever been an instance where we've had those issues.
You never had a rogue section?
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. Ms. Belinsky, I think, is probably correct from a legal standpoint. We would be affiliated with the sections. There are close ties in many ways, frankly, between the AUA and its sections. We're not denying that. I want to make the point that we don't control everything they do.
I don't understand you don't control everything they do, but they control a lot about what you do. They send you members of your board of directors by region, for example.
Yes, they do that.
Okay, so they have a lot of governance power over the national organization.
Each individual section sends us one member.
Yes.
And the sections, you know.
Is that eight?
Eight sections, yes.
Eight of about 13 or 14 board members.
Correct.
Of the AUA National are sent to you by your sections.
That's correct.
Okay, and that's a governing majority, it looks like.
But the eight of them are not a body that it's not sort of the sections versus the officers. It's a 14-member board.
I understand. I'm just saying the sections wag this dog. The sections... I'm not saying as a practical matter, the sections have all gotten together and there's some coalition, you know, where most of your board votes are probably consensus votes. But I'm just saying that the sections effectively control the national organization because they control 8 seats of a 13 or 14 member board of directors at the national level.
That is true.
Okay. And I want to get back to this point about whether or not I should consider the continuing involvement of these sections with the AACU and its PAC and attribute that to your national organization.
I mean,
why shouldn't I attribute those continuing relationships and activities to the national organization?
Well, I will say that the 8 section board members are among the board majority that wants to divorce themselves from AACU. So I think, you know, you can go around and around with it.
Mm-hmm.
The sections, I don't know why they're still contributing funds to AACU, but it may just be because there's no alternative at this point. There's no other political committee that they can contribute those funds to and that they can be a part of at this point. That's what we're asking for. We're asking for them to have the ability to contribute administrative funds to AUA's PAC at some point in the future if they decide to do that.
The decision to assert your independence from the AACU, was that done by board resolution of the AUA? Is there a board resolution calling for independence and disaffiliation of some, in some form of words? Or was it merely the officers?
No, there was a full board vote.
A board vote?
Yes.
And was that a unanimous vote?
Yes.
Anything further? Mr. Weintraub.
I just want to comment that, you know, when I came in here today, I was, obviously only have one set of drafts that supports one point of view, one potential answer on the table, and I was inclined to support it. But I do think it's a serious question that's being raised here as to whether the broader membership of the larger organization is being forced to maintain an association that they don't want to maintain, and that doesn't seem like a good result either. So I think I share Commissioner Goodman's view that perhaps a little bit more time to, and I really don't know where I'm going to land on this, but I think a little bit more time to chew on these issues would be beneficial.
If we do that, would you like to have an additional opportunity to give us a 10-page brief or something like that? To, or would you like to forget that and let us worry about it?
Whatever would be helpful to the commissioners.
Well, I think we've learned a lot at this session, that's for sure.
And as much as we support draft A, obviously if there's a different draft, we would appreciate the opportunity to comment on that.
Well, any further questions? Then at this point, we'll leave it where we will resume on the 22nd.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. That's very edifying. Of course. Commissioner Weintraub would like a moment of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to introduce everyone to a couple of wonderful new interns that we have in our office, Emma Wilbur and Lawton Carraher. You guys want to stand up so everybody can see who you are? We are really delighted. You can sit down now. We don't have to stand there awkwardly while I'm talking about you. I just wanted people to know what you look like. We're really lucky to have Emma and Lawton with us for the summer. They're both undergraduates at Davidson College in North Carolina. They are interested in politics both domestically and internationally. Lawton is a double major in political science and Hispanic studies, and Emma is a double major in political science and Russian studies. And they have a number of other extracurricular activities that they've been involved with that are benefiting their larger community, and they're just delightful and hardworking, and we're happy to have them, and welcome everybody to come by and chat with them and say hi.
Thanks very much. Yes, and welcome. And you saw our first congenial meeting. It was very good. And
was that our first congenial meeting?
I mean, it quite that way, but your first meeting shows that we are congenial.
You're obviously having a good influence.
What can I tell you? Anyway, thanks. I think that's we have no further business. Any management matters?
Mr. Chairman, there are no such matters.
The meeting's adjourned. Thanks. Thanks again for coming.